Morning. Today's daf in Yuma is daf Tess. Gemara yesterday got into a discussion in terms of what Lishkas Parhedrin is. We are moving a little bit ahead in the Mishnah, slowly but surely. The Mishnah told us that there were 7 days when the Kohen was sequestered, and they took him away from his wife, and the Mishnah says, where does he go? He goes to Lishkas Parhedrin. Okay, so it's already the second line of the Mishnah, and it's daf Tess. We're doing well. The Mishnah says that he's moved to one of the chambers in the Beis Hamikdash known as Lishkas Parhedrin, exactly where it was situated. So we identified that it was somewhere in the Azara. We also identified that it probably does not have Kedushas Azara. In fact, the Gemara a couple days ago says it can't have Kedushas Azara because that would mean that the Kohen Gadol would have to be standing there for 7 consecutive days. That's physically impossible. So therefore, we could say that it's physically situated in the Azara. But its status may be of Har HaBayis. Okay. Anyway, either way, that's where it was situated. Lishkas Parhedrin. It's a funny term. The term itself, Parhedrin. We'll see that term being used a couple of times throughout Shas. So usually it's a reference to staff members, to officers, but lowly officers, not high-ranking officers. Officers usually involved in collection of tax. Okay. So basically a tax collector for the government. Really a lowly position. Not only a lowly position, but it keeps getting transferred over. It doesn't have a long shelf life. If you were part of the Parhedrin, so you knew that your fate was sealed and you would only be working for a year. And a year you would get transferred or somebody would replace you. And so therefore there was no long-term employment. Anyway, that's generally speaking what Parhedrin is referred to. So to refer to this chamber as Lishkas Parhedrin, so basically it was derogatory. It was a pejorative term. You're basically saying regarding the Kohen Gadol, this Kohen Gadol, he's a low-ranking officer, and he really won't last long. And I really don't know how the Kohanim stood for that. But okay, somehow they did. That's the name of the chamber. Yesterday we saw in the Gemara. In fact, let's take a look back. It doesn't. We'll go back a couple lines. We'll start from the beginning of the sugya. We did this yesterday, but quickly to review. Lishkas Parhedrin Tanya. We learned in a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda v'chi Lishkas Parhedrin Aisa. Now is that the original name of the Lishka? V'alo Lishkas Balvati Aisa. No, it was not originally Lishkas Parhedrin, but it was actually originally Lishkas Balvati. To wish ela betchila yukarnos olishkas bavati matoch shnosh nosn lav mama lekahuna machlif enosok koshne masar chodesh ki parhedrin halalu shemachlif enosam koshne masar chodesh lefichachai yukarnos olishkas parhedrin. Once the Kohen Gadol position became a bought position, a purchased position, and the Kohen didn't last long, it didn't last a year. We're talking about the Kohen Gadol. So at that point in time, we changed the name. From Lishkas Bavati. Bavati is a reference to dignitary, like a real tsar, like a real prince, which is where the Kohen Gadol was stationed. But once the Kohen Gadol position became almost like a joke, and every year a new Kohen Gadol, so therefore it was called Lishkas Parhedrin. It was given this pejorative name. Okay. The Gemara is going to cite one other Mishnah in Shas where we see this term Lishkas Parhedrin Tanan Hasam. It's really a detour from the discussion of the Gemara, but simply because Lishkas Parhedrin is mentioned in this Mishnah, so therefore we quote it's a Mishnah in Demai. Just as a brief introduction, Demai, anytime you purchase produce from an Amma Aretz, someone who has a status of an Amma Aretz, how exactly do we know that he has the status of an Amma Aretz? I remember the Gemara in the 7th Parak of Brachos, we tried to give a definition of what exactly an Amma Aretz is, but for our purposes, just someone who's not careful, not scrupulous in terms of his performance of mitzvos. So if you buy produce from an Amma Aretz, so you're not 100% sure that he took off Trumas HaMaisos. So what are you supposed to do? Do it again, take off Trumas HaMaisos. Now there's a good chance that he took off Trumas HaMaisos, but as the Gemara says a number of times, it's a Chumah Derabanan, a rabbinic stringency, that you buy produce from Amma Aretz, and even if he says they took off Trumas HaMaisos, but you still got to take it off anyway. The Tanan Hasam, so there are a number of leniencies regarding, I'm sorry, before I read the Mishnah, and that produce is called Demai. The produce purchased from an Amma Aretz is referred to as demai. Demai, the term means demai. What is this? What is the status of this? And that's, we don't know. It's a state of suffix, and that's what we call it. That's what we refer to the produce. Okay. Demai, there's a good chance that the Amar took off Trumas HaMaisos, and because there's a good chance that he did so, on a number of occasions, the rabbis were lenient, meaning even though they were stringent, there was a general stringency regarding demai that you have to be mindful of Trumas HaMaisos, but at the same time, On a number of occasions, they were lenient. Aniyim, for example, poor people. So they could eat truma, they could eat demai. They don't have to take be mafish trumas and maestros. If you're in battle, so you don't have to take trumas and maestros off demai. Just as a couple of examples. No? Shabbat, what we say by Shabbat is that you could trust him. Meaning if he tells you he took off Trumas and Maestros, so then you could trust him. Another example. Okay, Tanan Hasam, so we are quoting a Mishnah in Demai, in the Masechta Demai, one of the Masechtos in Zraim. Hanachtomim, so now we're talking about bakers. Now bakers, so they're obviously, it's their business, it's their livelihood. So they're buying produce, grains from an Amaretz. Now if there's an if there's stringency for them to take off Trumas and Maestros off grain, which probably Trumas and Maestros were taken off anyway, so that for them would be a significant financial liability. So the Chachamim were maker when it comes to bakers. So the only thing that the bakers need to take off from the demai is only going to be Trumas Meiser. Trumas Meiser means the Meiser Mina Meiser. After the Levi takes off his 10%, I'm sorry, after you take off the 10% for the Levi, then 10% of that needs to go to the Kohen. So the Kohen is really receiving two streams of revenue of Truma. He's receiving from the Baal HaBayis 2%, and he's receiving from the Levi 10% of what he received, which is 1% of the original. Okay, so approximately, Kohen is receiving 3% of all produce as Truma. The this Nachtom, this baker, does not, he needs to take off what the Mishnah refers to as Trumas Meiser. Meaning Meiser Rishon, he doesn't have to give to a Levi. He'll separate the Meiser Rishon. He'll then take off 10% of the Meiser Rishon, so it's 1% of the original, and he'll give the Truma Mina Meiser to the Kohen. And he'll also give Challah as well. Challah is that after you make it into a dough, so you have to give a percentage to the Kohen. What percentage you have to give to the Kohen? So a Baal HaBayis, a regular person, a non-professional has to give a 24th. The Nachtom, the baker, has to give a 48th. Again, about another 2%, approximately. So anyway, Bishlama, and why not Truma Gedola? So that the Gemara is about to explain. So Bishlama, Truma Gedola. So Truma Gedola, so the baker doesn't have to give to the, doesn't have to be mafresh and give to the Kohen. D'tanya, because we learned in a bright one on the top of Tesamad Aleph, Lefi Shashach B'chol Gvuli, so Avarash, Shem, Mafresh, and El Truma Gedola B'vad. Because Truma Gedola is never in the question. We know that the Am Haaretz is going to be mafresh Truma Gedola. Okay, that he'll do without any hesitation. And why? Because, as Rashi points out over here, because the Am Haaretz, although he's ready to cheat a little bit on his Trumas and Maestros, right, we could say they're taxes, they are. So even though he's ready to cheat a little bit on his taxes, but Truma Gedola is not ready to cheat. Why? Why is he not ready to cheat? Because Truma Gedola has Kedusha. We know that a non-Kohen who eats Truma Gedola is subject to Misa B'dei Shamayim. So it's just not worth it. Not worth it for the Am Haaretz to cheat on his Truma Gedola. There's no question whatsoever. The Am Haaretz took off Truma Gedola. So therefore, the Nachtom, the baker who buys his produce from an Am Haaretz, he doesn't need to take off Truma Gedola. That's fine. That the Gemara says, I understand. And Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani Namilo. And as far as Maaser Rishon and Maaser Ani is concerned, we also understand that the baker doesn't have to separate Maaser Rishon nor Maaser Ani and give it to its recipients. Maaser Rishon obviously goes to a Levi, Maaser Ani goes to the poor people. That we know also doesn't need to occur because I'm Otsim Chaver Alavaraya. Because we have this principle of burden of proof. Meaning whenever it comes to any monetary law, so ownership, right, possession, and we say in America possession is 9/10 of the law, and halacha it's more, right, it's 10/10 of the law. In other words, if you're in possession of something, so that establishes ownership. So here, we're talking about Maaser Rishon, we're talking about Maaser Ani. Now, the Torah says that you, when you have produce, you have to give it to the Levi, Maaser Rishon to the Levi, and the Maaser Ani to the poor person. But here, chances are, and it's a good chance also, that the Am Haaretz has already mafresh his Trumas and Maestros. It's only because of the stringency imposed by the rabbis who have to be mafresh Trumas and Maestros. Okay, I have to separate it. But that doesn't mean I have to give it to the Levi. In other words, I say to the Levi, look, I have this produce secondhand. I bought it from the Am Haaretz. The chances are that he was mafresh Trumas and Maestros. And now I separate the Maestro Rishon, but now I'm supposed to give it to you? There is no absolute proof that you're the possessor of it. You have to come, the burden of proof is upon you. If you want Maaser Rishon, you have to bring me definitive proof that the Amarets that I purchased it from didn't separate Trumas and Maasers. Good. So in other words, it's strictly a monetary issue, and therefore there's no requirement for me to give the Maaser Rishon over to Levi. And the same thing is true regarding Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani is strictly a monetary issue, and so therefore there's no requirement for me to give the Maaser Ani to a Levi based on this rule of Motzei Min Chaver Al Haraya. Ela Maaser Sheni. But the Gemara says, here's the part I don't understand. Again, the Nachtam, the baker. So Maaser Sheni, the 10%. 10% that we take off Maaser Sheni means the second Maaser. 10% that we take off after the Maaser Rishon. Every year, except for the Shemitah year, Maaser Rishon is taken off. 10% is given off, given to a Levi. And then in years 1, 2, and 4, and 5, Maaser Sheni is taken off. In year 3 and 6, Maaser Ani is taken off. So in those 4 years, in 1, 2, 4, and 5, so the Gemara is wondering, Maaser Sheni has Kedusha, it has sanctity. Maaser Sheni has to be eaten in Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. So the Gemara is basically going to wonder, I don't understand. To the baker, if it's just a monetary issue, which is Maaser Rishon, Maaser Ani, I get it. You don't have to give it to them because the burden of proof is on them, not on you. Fine. But when it comes to Truma Gedola, the Gemara says, I get that also. Because every Amma Arts take off Truma Gedola. So fine. So the requirement is to take off. Trumas Maaser, right? Maaser mina Maaser and Chala. That I get. Maaser Sheni is what I don't get. He should be taking off Maaser Sheni because, in addition to the monetary component, the real issue by Maaser Sheni is that it has kedusha, and you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim. So how can you just keep the Maaser Sheni to yourself? Nifreshu, separate it, says the Gemara. V'nisku v'nichlu b'Yerushalayim, and bring it up and eat in Yerushalayim. Well, why is there no requirement for that? I'm Ula Mitoch. So Ula says, I'll explain to you why. Mitoch Shepahedron Alalu. And here we have the term Pahedron. Now, by the way, the word Pahedron over here is not a... It's not. I said it was used in the Mishnah. All right, a little inaccurate. It's Ula says it. But Mitoch Shepahedron Alalu Choftin Osan Kuyud Beis Choresh V'amrim Lehem Machru Bezol La Chechun Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, because of these Pahedron, these tax collectors. Tax collectors, every year there's a new tax collector. And what's his goal? I'm going to be different than the previous tax collector. Meaning that previous tax collector, he was no good. The reason, you know why he lost his job? Because he didn't collect enough taxes. Me? I'm going to be a much better tax collector. So these tax collectors, year after year, would just be more and more oppressive. So there, and the Chachamim realized that. And the Chachamim said to the baker, look, if we let him... if we're going to take away your Maaser Sheni in addition to everything else, Maaser Sheni is 10%. If we're going to take 10%, it's going to be very onerous upon you, the baker. Again, they were talking about his livelihood. So therefore, the Chachamim said to the baker, look, Trumas Maaser, it's 1%, that's just 1%. And Chala, you have no choice. You have to take off Chala. I mean, there's nothing we can do about that. The obligation for Chala doesn't even begin until you make dough. So there's nothing we can do about Chala as well. But in terms of Maaser Sheni, we're going to be Mekel. We're going to be lenient. Now, what basis can they be lenient? So, as Rashi points out, because again, when it comes to Demai, we understand that the majority of Amaratim take off Chumas and Maestros, and this is just a Chomra. So the Chachamim were just simply Mekel. They were just simply lenient. So therefore, they said to the baker, we're going to cut you a break. You don't have to take off Maaser Sheni. Not necessary. Because we understand the heavy tax burden that you have to these Parhedrin. And so therefore, the Chachamim said to the Nachtam, to the baker, so 10%, we're gonna cut you a break. Don't worry about bringing Maaser Sheni. Okay, but and the only reason why we brought all this is just because the term parhedron is used. Parhedron alo choftin aso kuyud beis chodesh. Chove means to like hit. They would beat them for 12 months. These tax collectors were so aggressive. But omrim lahem machru bezol. They said sell for cheap. So lo chachun rabbanan. So therefore, the rabbis didn't bother these bakers to give their Maaser Sheni. My Parhedron, and then the Gemara just ends the discussion over here. What is Parhedron? Porsi. So it's Porsi. Now, Porsi is a Aramaic word. It's a Persian word. Unclear, but it's basically Pekidim. It's these low-level officers. Basically tax collectors. They're staff, some sort of staff member of the king. But not high-ranking officers. All right. Adkan. And the reason why we all brought this up is because our Mishnah, talking about the chamber where the Kohen was sequestered for 7 days, was called Lishkas Parhedron. Okay, so now we have an understanding. The term is pejorative. That's clear. And now for the rest of today's daf. Today is a very, very, I'd say it's a popular daf. It's a known daf. You're going to see lines coming up in today. You're like, oh, I heard that. And then the Yuma daf test is where it's all from. Where basically the Gemara now is going to go into a discussion of what are we talking about? Meaning pejorative term describing the Kohanim, they were that bad? And basically after today's daf, you're going to nod your head and you're going to say, yeah, they were that bad. Right, and again, I'm going to try to avoid judgment, but when you follow the Gemara today, it's a pretty, you know, the Gemara is going to be very, very critical of the Kohanim during the Second Temple period. Okay, so here we go. The whole section starts here and it goes to the end of today's daf. It's going to continue into tomorrow's daf, and just very basic Gemaras that deal with Bayis Rishon versus Bayis Sheni. The pasuk the Gemara quotes is from Mishlei. The pasuk that's quoted by Rav Yochanan, Yiras Hashem Tosif Yamim Shnos Rishayim Tikatzrenam. Pasuk of Mishlei says that fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Tosif Yamim. It adds days. So you have Yiras Shamayim, so it's going to add to your life. Shnos Rishayim, but the years of the wicked are Tikatzrenam, they're going to be shortened. And the Gemara is going to darshan. Yiras Hashem Tosif Yamim Zem Mikdash Rishon. Shamar Arbe Meos Vesu Shanim. So as far as the first half of this pasuk in Mishlei, that's a reference to the first temple, which existed in totality for 410 years. Velo shamu bo ala, velo shimshu bo ala yudches kohanim gedolim. And in total, those 410 years, there were only 18 kohen gadols, from beginning to end. Okay, what exactly is the correct gears of the Gemara over here? The way we have in our Gemara, it's the number is 18. If you take a look at the Gon has Shnei Masar has 12. Take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos has a lengthy discussion in terms of what the exact number is. So somewhere in the range of 18 to 12. Could be an accounting issue in terms of when we count from. Okay. But the point of the Gemara, however, is very straightforward. There weren't a lot of Kohen Gadols during the first temple period. In the 410 years, so, right, what's the average? The average is 25 years? Okay. A nice longevity of Kohen Gadol in that position. Now we go to the second half of the pasuk. Zem Mikdash Sheni. So that's the second base of Mikdash. Shama Dal Meos Ve'esrim Shana. Now the second temple lasted for 420 years. Vishim Shibo Yoser Mishlosh Meos Kohanim. 300 Kohanim in a 420 year span, and it's worse than you think. Not better than, it's worse than you think. And the Gemara goes on to explain why is it worse than you think. Say Mehem Shana Shishim Shimon HaTzadik. The first Kohen Gadol that lived during the Second Temple period was Shimon HaTzadik. So write the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik Mishayare Knesset HaGadolah. He was the last of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. So that means that he was the beginning of the Second Temple period. So he served for 40 years. Shimon HaTzadik is going to come up a number of times over this Masechta. We're going to see him coming up again later on. So he was a special human being. The name kind of gives it away, right? Shimon HaTzadik. Ushmonim Shishim Esh Yochanan Kohen Gadol. And now 80 years that Yochanan Kohen Gadol served. So already now, what are we talking about? We're talking about 120 years of the 420 years of the Second Temple. Okay? So the math is really simple. So 420 minus 120, we're now talking 300. Esther Shishim Esh Yishmal Ben Pavi. And now you can deduct another 10 or maybe 11 years. Gemara has two versions. But anyway, we're now under 300. The number now is under 300 years. So that means then that from that point going forward, we're talking about 300 other Kohanim in less than 300 years, right? 290, 289. So now the math is very simple. None of them made it another year. They didn't live in the last year. And now going back to the beginning of this whole discussion, now we understand the Parhedrin terminology. The Parhedrin terminology referring to these tax collectors who didn't make it a year. So every time the Kohen Gadol went into the chamber, so we reminded each other, hey, you know where he's going? Lishkas Parhedrin. He's not making it a year. I know the obvious question would be, well, why would anyone take that position if they know that they're not going to be making it in a year? And maybe the first and second Kohen Gadol, maybe the 10th Kohen Gadol, but already up to Kohen Gadol number 50, right? Kohen Gadol number 200. It was a death sentence to become the Kohen Gadol. Okay. Maybe it speaks to how power corrupts. Okay, there's a number of ways to look at it and to analyze it. A quick historical point, which we've spoken about in the past a couple of times. Our Gemara has the first temple being 410, and the second temple being 420. Those are your numbers of years in terms of first and second temple. Secular historians have a much different, not much, I'll take that word back. They have a different accounting in terms of how long the second temple lasted. You ask any secular historian, when was the second temple destroyed? Sorry, let me ask the question the other way. All right, let me go the other direction. When was the second temple built? When was the first temple destroyed? Secular historian. So 586. 586 is your magic number. You look up any history book in a secular history book, and you're going to see the number is 586. So that's 70 years later. That's how long the exile lasted. So now the second temple was built, right? 586 minus 70. Remember, we're talking BCE. So 586. So we're talking 516. So 516 is when the second temple was built. Now, to go from 516 BCE to 70 of the Common Era, which we all agree, second temple was destroyed. 70 of the Common Era, so you're talking about a long second temple period. Right? A second temple period that lasted, okay, just ballpark, right, almost 600 years. Okay. So that's secular history has the second temple lasting for 600 years. Right? So, and our tradition, which is stated very clearly in the Gemara over here, and a number of places, you can take a look at Seder Olam, right? That is, so you'll see that our tradition is that the second temple lasted 420 years, not the nearly 600 years that's described by secular historians. So is there a way to resolve that discrepancy? So I have a book at home, which it's very good. He catalogs, this is an interesting book. He catalogs everyone's take on this, meaning the Rabbanim throughout the history, throughout the ages, obviously since the Second Temple, try to explain, because this discrepancy has been known for a long time, meaning this is not a new discrepancy. This discrepancy has existed for some time. And so both Chachamim, historians alike, Chachamim also got involved in this discussion, try to explain the discrepancy between our view of what the Second Temple is, 420, versus what the secularists believe to be nearly 600 years of the Second Temple period. You know what's really at issue? Just to quickly reduce this whole topic into one sentence. the issue is how long the Persians ruled. The secular historians have them ruling for a long time, and the Jewish tradition has them ruling for a very short time. So that's one of the critical issues. But, okay, anyway. Okay, that was just an interesting historical aside, and you may not be interested by that history, but it's an issue. Amar Rav Yochanan ben Torta. Back to the Gemara. We are on Testament Aleph, about five lines from the bottom. Amar Rav Yochanan ben Torta, mibnei macharva Shila. So why was Shila destroyed? Shila was the first temple in the base, first temple in Eretz Yisrael. Underrated how long Shila lasted for. How long did it last for? 369 years. Shila lasted. Okay, that's nearly as long, just a little historical context. That's nearly as long as the first temple, it's nearly as long as the second temple, right? So Mishkan Shiloh, the temple of Shiloh, lasted for almost four centuries. So why was it destroyed? Because there were two sins that the Kohanim were involved with, and so as a result of that, Shiloh was destroyed. In other words, the way the Gemara is viewing it is that basically Shiloh was the first Beis HaMikdash. Okay, I understand we don't usually use the terminology for Shiloh, but you'll see, in other words, the whole context of the Gemara is, why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? Why was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed? But before that, though, we have the proto Beis HaMikdash, which is Mishkan Shiloh, so in which it lasted almost four centuries. So it's almost like the same type of discussion, why was it destroyed? Sounds like from the Gemara, had it not been for the sins, it would have lasted for longer. So it's certainly the flavor you get from this whole discussion. So two sins that we know about for during the last years of Shiloh, and that is Gilui Arayos and Bizayin Kachim. Gilui Arayos, as far as illicit behavior, moral behavior of Eli Zakei Ma'od v'Shamas Kol Asher Yasum Banav v'Chol Yisrael. Eli was very old. We're now in the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. Right, the end of the Shiloh period, right, what will become the beginning of the Beis HaMikdash period. Right, that's what Shmuel is. It's a transition from Shiloh to the Beis HaMikdash. Right, Shmuel Beis is where the Beis HaMikdash is built. by Shlomo HaMelech. But anyway, so going back to Eli is the end of the Shiloh period. So he hears about what his sons do, and what do? So his sons would sleep with the women as they were approaching, trying to bring their karbanos. That's a simple pshat in the pasuk. We'll remind one another. We don't need to remind one another. The Gemara says it. The Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara in Shabbos says, you know, if you go out and say that the Bnei Eli, the sons of Eli, sinned, you know you're making a terrible mistake. Meaning, don't understand the pasuk literally. The pasuk, although very harsh in its treatment of the sons of Eli, it does not mean that they actually slept with the woman who were trying to come and bring their karban. And probably what they were bringing was a carbon yoledes. I mean, they just gave birth. And if it's a male, they're coming 40 days after. If it's a female, they're coming 80 days afterwards. But basically, postpartum, they're coming to bring their karbanos. And the simple pshat in the pasuk is that they slept with these women. And the Gemara here tells us, and the Gemara Shabbos Daf and Hey tells us, don't take these pshatim literally. So, but what they did, however, is that they were involved in delaying. Right, it was a little bit of psychological torture. The women wanted to make sure that their birds were being offered, because you know that they don't have a full tahara until their karbanos are offered, and they, the kohanim, meaning the sons of Eli, delayed the bringing of their karbanos, and so therefore they were delayed over there, and they didn't go back home to their husbands until the birds were actually offered, and so they, the sons of Eli, basically caused a delay of these wives returning to their husband. That's inappropriate. It's ki'ilu, it's as if they slept with him. So malala, because of ki'ilu shachvum, it's like they slept with him, the Gemara says. Just as an interesting note, the Gemara here in Yuma is referencing the Gemara in Shabbos Daftan Hey. The Gemara in Shabbos Daftan Hey says there's another pasuk you shouldn't take literally, going back to yesterday's Parsha. Yesterday we read Parsha's Vayishlach. So Reuven seemingly did something which was totally inappropriate, right? Huh? And the Gemara in Shabbos Daftan Hey, same Gemara. So the Gemara in Shabbos Daftan Hey says, yeah, but don't take the pasuk literally. It doesn't mean that the pasuk sounds like he slept with his stepmother. Don't understand the pasuk that way. But rather, he switched around the beds. It's ki'ilu, right? It's as if. So just a connection between our Gemara over here and, I was going to say, today's Parsha, but really yesterday's Parsha.
Okay.
What they did was a chait. But just male aleim akasav ki'ilu. In other words, what they did was wrong, but just don't understand the pasuk as literally as we read it.
The sin of sleeping, but not the sin.
Right. In the context of you're saying why does the Gemara refer to as gilu arayas? Is that what bothers you? Right. But no, correct. Not the one that we're reading. Correct. Oh, I thought you were asking another question. Let me offer up another question. The Gemara says Gilo Arias. Right, that's what they did. Alright, then now in our new understanding of the pasuk, it's not really Gilo Arias.
It just prevented the to have a relation with the
Correct. I mean it's wrong, it's inappropriate, but it's not Gilo Arias.
No, but it's okay.
Okay. No, but I understand that. But the Gemara introduces this as if it's Gilo Arias. Okay. Bizayon Kachim. Another thing they did is they were mevazeh karbanos. They degraded karbanos. How so? Dechsev the pasuk says, "Gam b'terem yaktiru mesachilu v'anar hakohen v'amar le'isha zoveach." So here comes the nar kohanim, the young kohanim, and this is what they said. Now, by the way, this is not necessarily Chafne and Pinchas, the sons of Eli. Could be that this is referring to other kohanim. Either way, Chafne and Pinchas were responsible. They were liable. And here's what they said: the kohanim, "Tana basal etzlos the kohen, give us the meat." Demanding the meat of the karban. We don't want cooked meat, we want the meat raw. We want it right now. So, so they said to the kohanim, okay, here, well, just wait one second, because you know the order. The proper sequence should be, first the chelev goes up onto the mizbeach, then you'll receive your portion. Okay? And the response by the Kohanim were no, not correct. No, not the chelev on the Mizbeach first. First our portion, and then you do whatever you need to do. And oh, by the way, you delay, we're going to take it by force. And the pasuk goes on to describe that the chet was very great. Because they were noites. They rejected. They rejected minchas Hashem. Okay. So that is now Mishkan Shiloh. The destruction of Mishkan Shiloh came as a result of two chatayim that the Navi describes. One is Gilui Arayos, the description of the Bnei Eli who delay the women from returning home to their husbands. And the second is Bizayon Kachim, how they degraded with the Karbanos. They demanded their piece and basically extorted their pieces of meat even before the Chel went up onto the Mizbech. Okay, that's all by Mishkan Shiloh. And now the Gemara continues. We're on Tesam and Beis, and we're at the two dots, first wide line. And we're going to now describe the classic Gemara regarding the first base of Mikdash, second base of Mikdash. Mikdash, Rishon, Mimnei Macharev. Why was the first base of Mikdash destroyed? Mimnei Gimel Dvarim, because the three things, Shayu Bo, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim. The big three. I say the big three because we know that when it comes to giving up your life for Yiddishkeit, so generally speaking, V'chai Behem, there's no requirement to give up your life. But when it comes to Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah, so there's a requirement to give up your life. So you're Mekadashim Shemayim with these three sins. Anyway, so it's the big three. So this was what they were involved with, and as a result of that, the first base of Mikdash was destroyed. Avodah Zarah Dichsev. Now the Gemara is going to say Psukim, that's going to describe how all these Chatayim were actually part of the first base of Mikdash. Number one, Apostle Yishayahu Ki Katzar HaMatzah Mishtareya. The mat is too short, it can't be stretched out. My Katzar HaMatzah Mishtareya. So the Navi is not that clear, a little ambiguous. The Gemara Darshan, Tamar Rav Yonasan, Katzar HaMatzah Mishtareya Alea Shnei Re'im Ke'achad. The mat was tried to be stretched out so that two Re'im, literally friends, although in this context, wouldn't exactly call them friends, but two friends were able to sleep on the same mat. Right? You know, this town isn't big enough for the two of us. So basically that kind of idea. What's the Gemara referencing over here? In other words, again, even the explanation of the Gemara is also ambiguous. So as Rashi points out, the Gemara here is referencing Menashe. Menashe was a terrible king of Yehuda. Menashe was the son of Chizkiyahu. Right, Chizkiyahu ben Nevuah knew that he was going to have a son this bad. That's why actually Chizkiyahu didn't want to have children. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "They're my problems, and then they're your problems. My problems is the future. That's not your problem. Your problem is that there's a mitzvah peruvu. You have to have children. So right then, Chizkiyahu was told by the Navi that he was going to die, and he prayed to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he got an extension, a 15 year. Right? Does that sound right?
Yes.
Okay, sounds right. He got a 15-year extension, and so therefore he produced Menashe. So, and Menashe was just terrible, and one of the things that he did is he took an idol and he put it in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what the Navi here is referring to. The Navi Yeshayahu talking about the Shnei Reim, right? The two friends, and it's just such a strange way to describe it, but the two friends that were being stretched down and being put on the mat together, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the... With the idol that was set up by Menashe. V'amasechat tzara ki itkanes. And the Gemara is going to explain. Yeah, the Gemara is going to explain. I'm Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, ki mata Rabbi Yonasan l'haikra. When Rabbi Yonasan got to this pasuk in Yeshayahu, bachi. So he would cry. We usually see this kind of terminology by Rabbi Akiva. But the Gemara here describes it by Rabbi Yonasan. When he arrived at this pasuk, he would start crying. So regarding Kadosh Baruch Hu, it says Koneis Kaneid Mehayam, that the waters curled up, meaning stood up, on behalf of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So they made like a tzara, like a co-wife. Right, you see the word tzara used very often. We'll get to Yavamas. We're going to hear that word again and again. Right, when a man is married to more than one wife, they're called tzaras. They're co-wives. And by the way, the term, this is not a joke. I don't mean this by any way in a joke. But the word tzara, meaning because they're tzar, they cause anguish to one another. Right, having to fight over the attention of their one husband. So here too, so the going back to the pasuk Yeshayahu, that's how the Navi describes the coexistence, if we can even say that. The coexistence of the Masecha, the idol that was set up in Asher, in the same area where there's the Shekhinah, where it's the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that's Avodah Zarah. Okay, so that's, and Menashe is the one who is held accountable for the Avodah Zarah. By the way, we are really, in other words, we're looking at the end of the second temple period, I'm sorry, the end of the first temple period. Meaning, I understand that what the Gemara is looking at is, what are the telltale signs, what are the simanim at the end of each of these periods which caused the destruction? So by the Mishkan Shiloh, so we're looking at B'nai Eli, which was the end of Mishkan Shiloh. So here we're looking towards Menashe, which is towards the end of Mishkan Shiloh. After Menashe, you're talking about a handful of kings before the first base of Mikdash was destroyed. Gilu Arayas Dechsev, Ayom Hashem Yanki Gavu, Beno Sion, Vetelachnan, Tios Garon, Omitzakros, Einayin, Haloch, Vetafuf, Telachnan, Veraglem, Taach Sena. The Navi, in the beginning of Yeshayahu, I learned this with Rabbi Schwartz a couple years ago. Okay? A couple decades ago. So the Navi in the beginning of Yeshayahu describes how the women were very provocative. They dressed provocatively, and they were just provocative. This is Yeshayahu, so this is also the end of the first temple period. Yan ki gavu b'no Sion shayu mahalchos arucha b'tzad kitzara. So what they would do is they would try to make themselves noticeable. So they would have women walk side by side, a tall woman with a short woman. In other words, what's the point? The point is just simply to gain attention. Vatelachna n'tuyos garon, outstretched neck, shayu mahachos become a zakufa. A very straight posture. Again, to gain attention. Umisakros einayim da'avamayim kuchla einayim. A lot of makeup. Aloch v'tafufta telachna shayimachum ekev b'tzad godo. Take really small steps, right? Heel to toe. So that when they were walking, they wouldn't take normal strides. They would walk really slowly. And again, all this was to gain attention. Over Aglem Tachsena, that's the last words of the pasuk in Yeshayahu Perigimel. Amar Yisrael Chayu Mevios Mor Va'afar Simona Menichos B'Minaleihem Ukshemigios Eitzal Bechuri Yisrael Boatos Umitizos Aleihem. So what they would do is they would have another strategy in terms of how to attract the young men. So they would put some sort of perfume in their foot in some sort of bag. And then, as they pass by Bechor Yisrael, as they pass by young Jewish men, so bo atos, they would kick their foot into the ground, release the perfume. Umetizus aleim amachnisam em yetzahara ke'eres. The word we have in our Gemara is bechos. The Bach changes it to ba'achna. But basically, the point is that, and the yetzahara just goes like poison of a snake, goes right into the young men as they're smelling the perfume. And once again, it led to Gilo Arayas. So that's a description of the Gilo Arayas that existed at the end of Bais Rishon. Shvichus Damin, murder. The pasuk says, "V'gam dam naki shafach min asher harbe ma'od asher malei es Yerushalayim po lepo." Okay, the Navi says that Menashe was a murderer. It was a terrible murder. Killed a lot of innocent blood, and so that was the Shvichus Damin. So really, the Avodah Zarah and the Shvichas Damim is directly attributable to Menashe, and the Gilu Arayos, we have a pasuk in Yeshayahu, not clear exactly when it existed. Contextually, I'm going to guess that it was, again, during the end of the first temple period. Ava Mikdash Sheni, but when it comes to the second temple, Shayu Oskim, the Torah and Mitzvot and Gemilas Chasadim, where they were involved in Torah and Mitzvot and Gemilas Chasad, Mimnei Macharav, Mimnei Shehaisa Bo Sinas Chinam. So why was it destroyed? Because there was so much sinas chinam, there was so much baseless hatred. And the Gemara makes the obvious point, which is, look how bad sinas chinam is. Because the first temple was destroyed for the big three, the second temple, Torah, Mitzvot, Milas Chesed, we had it all, but sinas chinam, but we had the baseless hatred, and obviously we can create an equivalency of sinas chinam to the big three. I don't know who to give credit to, but it's such a great vort. Meaning, it says that during the second temple period there was gemilas chesed, and there was also baseless hatred. So, in other words, you could be kind, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be loving. Meaning, it's right. During the second temple period, they were good to each other. They performed acts of chesed to one another, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily liked one another. Right, sometimes you do it because you're told to do it and not because you actually want to do it. It's a major difference between the two, and And it's and you can see it right here in our Gemara. So Gemara gets a little caught up over here in Girsa, but Ushvichas, I'm sorry, Avar Zar Gilodam, Ushvichas Damim, Rishayim Hayu El Shatala Bitchonam Bakarish Baruch Hu. So this is like a continuation of the Brisa, if you will. Asan LaMikdash Rishon, that goes back to the first Beis HaMikdash. Meaning in the first Beis HaMikdash where they were acting so radically wrong, meaning murder and idolatry and Gilu Arayos. But basically what their argument was is it's not an issue. It's not a problem. Because we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu here, meaning he's in our midst. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is obviously in the first temple. I say obviously because the Gemara tells us that there were a number of miracles that took place during the first temple. So there was clearly the presence of the Shekhinah. So we acted in such inappropriate ways, but our thinking was, it's okay. Hashem is still here. Again, going back to the Psukim and Navi, here we're in Micha. Its leaders were bribed in order to judge. The Kohanim, so whenever they ruled, so it cost money. Unavia bekesef yiksomu. Nevi'im, they prophesied, but at a cost. Mal Hashem yishanu. And they relied on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lemar lo Hashem bekerbeinu. They said, look, Hashem is here. So lo tavo l'nara, nothing's going to befall us. Lefichachav elehevi aleim HaKadosh Baruch Hu gimel gzeres kenegi gimel aver shebiyadam. The first temple was destroyed, and with three levels, the three layers of destruction corresponding to the three sins of the Jewish people. Shenem alachem beglachem, Tzion sadeh techaresh, Tzion was plowed over, v'yushalayim iyein tiyeh, Yushalayim was reduced to ruins, v'harabayis labamos yar, and Harabayis was converted into a forest. Okay. So these three different levels of destruction, layers of destruction, connected the three big averos for the first base of Mikdash. Now the Gemara notes, is it true that there was no sinas chinam during the first base of Mikdash? And again, by the way, you can ask the same question over here. How the Gemara is assuming that we love one another, but there was also shvichas damim. That's also strange. I think a little more difficult to try to explain. But anyway, v'haksiv, but we do have a pasuk. Megure el cherev hayu esami lachen sipuk al yarech. Hit your hand to your thigh, meaning basically wail, moan. You should be mourning. V'amar avlazer el b'nei adam sha'ochlem v'shosin zem zeh v'dokun zeh zeh b'charva shabul shonam. They eat together, but at the same time they cut each other with tongues, meaning they speak terribly about one another. So that sounds like there was also baseless hatred during the first temple as well. To which the Gemara says, Ayib Nasi Yisrael Havai. So the Gemara says, no, that's not the general feeling of one Jew on another Jew during the first temple. First temple, there was not baseless hatred. First temple, there was, they had Ahava, they loved one another. Right. Okay. That may be a fair point. But and this pasuk is just describing the Nesi'im, right? Dignitaries. They had a hatred for one another. The pasuk says, "Za'ik ve'hilal ben Adam ki aisa be'ami v'tanya zak ve'hilal ben Adam yachol akol." I might think that this applies to everybody. Tamalomer he bechol Nesi'ei Yisrael. No. Only by the Nesi'im, by the dignitaries, they had a hatred for one another. But the general feeling, the general consensus, was that there was Ahava, there was love between one another. Okay, so we spent now time contrasting the first Beis HaMikdash to the second Beis HaMikdash. First Beis HaMikdash, so they violated Averos, but openly violating Averos. But the underhanded, the undermining, baseless hatred that didn't exist during the first temple. A little bit, says the Gemara, by the dignitaries, but generally speaking, no. Second Beis HaMikdash, just the opposite. In terms of our performance of mitzvahs, we were great. In terms of our feelings towards one another, not great. Baseless hatred. Rav Yochan, Rav Elazar, Da'ami Tarvai, Rishonim Shenizgala Avonam Nizgala Katsam, Achronim Shalom Nizgala Avonam Nizgala Kitsam. Another observation based on this distinction, and that is Gilui HaKetz, the revelation of the end of the Galus. Right, we're going to see this in Parsha in just a short couple of weeks from now. Right, Yaakov wanted to reveal to his sons when the Galus is going to end, when the diaspora is going to end, and that's the funny transition from Parshas Vayigash to Parshas Vayechi, meaning no separation. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu did not allow for the revelation of the Ketz. So one time historically there was a revelation that was from the first Beis HaMikdash to the second Beis HaMikdash. Rashi notes over here that it's a Navi, the Navi in, I want to say Daniel. No, I mean, yes and no, meaning I'm right, but Rashi quotes the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. But Daniel also, the Nevi'im after the destruction of the first temple said 70 years, that's it. This Golus is only going to last for 70 years. And the Nevi'im told them that. So there was a Gilui, there was a revelation of how long the Golus is going to last. And why, the Gemara here is explaining why. Because since we were Chote Begalui, our sins were revealed. We weren't underhanded. Meaning we were bad during the first temple, but exposed. Everyone knew what was going on. Everyone knew what we were doing wrong. So therefore the Golus was revealed. The Ketz HaGolus was revealed. 70 years and that's it. And when we get to Megillah, it's a little complicated Gemara, but very enjoyable. The Gemara over there is going to try to figure out how to count those 70 years. And everyone made mistakes in terms of how to count those, right? Including Achashverosh. He didn't know how to count those 70 years. And that was the big party that he made in the beginning of the Megillah. Okay, well, we get to the Megillah Daf Yud Yadav, somewhere around there. So the Gemara has that discussion. But there was a Gilu HaKetz that was revealed. When it comes to the second Beis HaMikdash and the Churban Bayit Sheni, so there was no revelation. Why? Because our sin was not revealed. Meaning we were very underhanded to one another. A lot of baseless hatred, which is kind of nondescript. It's kind of hard to see. You can see Shvichas Damim, you can't see baseless hatred. So the Gemara says, as a result of that, there was no Gilu HaKetz. See, how long the Golus is going to last? So unfortunately, right, we were still asking the question, we don't know. I'm Rav Yochanan Tovat Siponim Shel Rishonim Kreso Shel Achronim. Fingernails of the earlier generations were greater than the stomachs of the later generation. So I'm Le Reish Lakish Adarab Achronim Adife. So Reish Lakish says, no, just the opposite. The later generations are greater. Reish Lakish is a little bit biased, but he says, no, the later generations are greater. Afagav Di'ika Shibar Machias Ka'aska B'Torah. Because look, we may be under Shibat Galios. So we are being oppressed by the other nations, but we're learning Torah. So Amalei Bira Tochiach Shechazol Lishonim V'lo Chazol Achronim. So he says, look, I don't know what else to tell you. Beis HaMikdash, meaning that's an answer Sheina Lav Tshuva. That's a Sheila Sheina Lav Tshuva. Meaning, look, the Beis HaMikdash returned to the earlier generations. We're not getting back to Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't that say it all? Shalos Rabbi Elazar Rishonim Gedolim Achronim Gedolim. This discussion also existed by Rabbi Elazar. Who's greater, earlier generations or later generations? Amar lahem tenuei nechem bebira. Look at the Beis HaMikdash, or lack thereof. Meaning that gives the answer away. There's no Beis HaMikdash now. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash. And you're asking which generation is greater. So igadam amar lahem eidechem bira. Another way to say it, but the same basic point. Beis HaMikdash is that testifies. Meaning the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, you now know which generations are greater, earlier versus later. Reish Lakish avasachei biyardena. Reish Lakish was bathing in the Yarden. Right, those of you who know Reish Lakish know this is not the first time he was bathing in the Yarden. But this is a later story. This is not the Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish story. So Reish Lakish was bathing in the Yarden. Asa Rabba Barachana yav leyada. So Rabba Barachana gives him a hand. Now there's a meeting over here, not just between two people, but between two communities. Reish Lakish represented the community of Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Barachana represented the community of Bavel. And as we've seen time and again, there was a little bit of acrimony between the two communities. They didn't, whatever. I don't think it's a coincidence that this Gemara is coming right off the heels of the Sinas Chinim that existed between the Jews of the Second Temple. But Amalei, Allah, Sanina Lachu. So instead of saying, hello, how are you? Right? And a nice greeting. And Rabbi Barachana is just giving his hand to help Reish Lakish out of the Yarden. But Allah, Sanina Lachu, God hates you. But mind you, by the way, as I translate the Gemara's line into English, you don't really hear it because it doesn't mean God hates you, meaning you, Rabbi Barachana. No, that's not what it means. It's Allah, Sanina Lachu. You in the plural. In English, you lose that. Meaning it's not you singular, it's you plural. Meaning you, all of you. Meaning you Babylonians. Dechsev, imchamahi nivne ala tirat, kesev, vimdelati natsur alaha luach erez. Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, which the Gemara obviously is understanding, b'derech hadrush, if it's If it's a wall, so we'll build a crown on the wall. And if it's a door, so we'll just we'll make it out of wood. Okay, so the crown is made up of silver, and the door is made up of wood. And how does the Gemara understand this? You know, Ezra was coming up from Bavel to build the second Beis HaMikdash. You know, I really wish everyone would have come with him. Only a small fraction of the Jewish people came up together with Ezra. Somewhere in the 42,000 as the number of Jews who came up together with Ezra, a small fraction of the number of Jewish people that existed at that time. I don't know what the total Jewish population was at the time. But anyway, 42,000 represented a small fraction. And had we all come up, Nimshaltim Kekesef, so then we would have been like silver, Shein Reker Sholei Bo, meaning the base of Mikdash would have been made of an enduring material. But now only a small fraction of the Jewish people came up from Bavel. So that means that there was a large Jewish population in Bavel, and from the way our Gemara sounds like it existed during the entire Second Temple period. Meaning it wasn't that we were exiled to Bavel after destruction of the Second Temple. It sounds like from our Gemara, no, that once we were exiled to Bavel, after the destruction of the First Temple, there existed a Jewish community there during the entire Second Temple period. Sharekev Sholebo, my eras. So the Gemara now wants to know, in what regard are we like wood? Meaning, like wood that rots. Meaning, if we all went up, we'd be like silver, which doesn't rot. But now only some of us went up, so we're like wood that rots. And the Gemara says, my eras, Amar Ula, Sasmagar. So that we were like worms, meaning like worm infestation in the wood. My Sasmagar, Rabbi Abba Baskol. So the We lost our powers of prophecy. Once the Nevi'im of Chag Zachariah Malachi, the last of the Nevi'im, who lived at the beginning of Bayisheni, so we no longer had Ruach HaKodesh, it's a higher level of prophecy, and all we were left with was a Baskol. That's less, and it's just a decay. It's just a fraction of what once upon a time was. Okay, we'll stop over here. The Gemara, today's daf, right? The basic daf, a popular daf, I'd say. Right? We generally know the highlights, but today's daf started off by exploring where else we find the word barhedron. We found it in used to help us understand the Mishnah in Demai. And then we compared and contrasted the first base of Mikdash to the second base of Mikdash. First base of Mikdash, Avodah Zarah, Shvichus Dam Gilui Arayos, typified the sins of the first base of Mikdash. Second base of Mikdash was Sinas Chinam. And based on that, the Gemara explained a number of other basic differences that existed between Bais Rishon and versus Bais Sheni. Stop over here.